namo bhagavate vasudevaya om namo bhagavate vasudevaya om namo bhagavate vasudevaya
om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading this morning from text 8 of chapter 2, Canto 1, Divinity and Divine Service. This is, all these verses are very, very important verses, so one should think about them very carefully in light of the whole teaching of devotion. The previous two verses, texts 6 and 7 of chapter 2, are Sutta Goswami's answer to Maharaj Pariksit's question, Sutta Goswami's answer to the sages of Naimisharanya's question, which was, what's the essence of the entire Vedas? What's the message, the core essence? And that core essence is engaging in devotional service without motivation and without interruption. And without any other shelter but the Supreme. Then this verse is saying, what's the measure of success of that devotional service? How do you evaluate, is that devotional service being done effectively, nicely, properly? People ask that question sometimes. How do I, by what measures, by what standard should I check myself to see if I'm advancing properly in spiritual life? Two of those things have already been identified. That's the detachment from temporary things and knowledge of the Supreme awakened within the heart. Here, text number 8 and 9 and 10 are similarly addressing standards or what we should really be focusing on when we're engaging in devotional service. So, the verse dharmakvanustatakpumsam vishvaksena katasaya notpadayad yadiratim shrama eva hikevalam. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position. There was this question the other day about swadharma. Here it is. Dharma sva. Svadharma. Dharma svanustatak. Svanustatak, Prabhupada is translated as executed in terms of one's own position. Dharma, so there was in the discussion the other day, there's Sanatan Dharma and Svadharma. So Sanatan Dharma is broad, Svadharma is very specific. That which is a principle that all living entities follow is their eternal position of serving Krishna. Then there's each person has some service to Krishna and some other service and some other service. So in terms of one's own position, there's svadharma. So dharma svanustatak pungsam. Pungsam means of mankind, because dharma is for humans, and less than humans, they don't have religious duty. They bark and wag their tail and chew on bones and they do all kinds of things, but they don't have any religious duty. And humans, if they don't perform religious duty, they're in another category than human. Dvipada pashu, two-legged animals. So, dharmak svanustatat pungsang, that each person, according to his own position, has some occupational duty, and the measure of how effectively that duty is being done is, from the Bhagavatam perspective, Vishvaksena Kata Suya Katasu, the message of the personality of Godhead is awake, the attraction for that message is becoming stronger. Rati. Not pariyad ratim. Utpariyad is produce, does produce. Rati. So that means you're going to the office every day is supposed to be done in such a way that your attraction for Krishna Katha increases. Now, is that what you experience? It's not going to work every day. It's not that activity itself, but it's how you conduct your life around that activity. How you mold your life in such a way that going to work doesn't kill your Krishna consciousness or doesn't cover your Krishna consciousness. But you mold your life in such a way that the occupational duty that you're doing is carried out, it's seen, it's perceived, the paradigm of your life is such that this is also a service to Krishna. My life is but a service to Krishna, and that consciousness of my life is but service to Krishna is awakened by the hearing and chanting activities of your life. The manner in which and the regulation with which and the quality of your hearing and chanting will awaken that consciousness, and your duties at home, your duties at work, your dirty duties in the workplace, your duties when you move in social circles, it's to serve Krishna. My life is but an expression of service to Krishna. That consciousness is awakened by hearing and chanting. So, state the same thing in reverse order, and the success of how I do my occupational duties is my attraction for hearing and chanting is increasing. And that means, so the material portion of my duties in the home, in the workplace, in the marketplace, in the social environment, my duties in life are not for fulfilling some material want. It's that portion is removed, and what's left is an expression of devotion to Krishna. So go back to the previous verse where causeless knowledge and detachment flow from devotional service. The knowledge is not the information kind of knowledge we were discussing yesterday. It's the transcendental knowledge of who I really am. Who I really am is spirit soul. My family members are really spirit soul. The people in the workplace are really spirit soul. People in the social forum, they're really spirit souls. And all these other designations are just coverings of a real identity of spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, meant to serve and love Krishna. Knowledge, when that knowledge is awakened, one can be in those different circumstances and still be awake to who I really am and who these other people really are and who God really is. And one is just moving through different circumstances of life, doing expressions of Swadharma, being fixed on Sanatana Dharma. The eternal occupation is that we're serving God. Sanatana Dharma. So the measure of our Swadharma is that we're connecting with Sanatana Dharma. We're connecting with Krishna. And when connecting with Krishna, the attraction for hearing about Krishna becomes awakened. So we don't hear too much about Krishna in the workplace. We don't hear too much about Krishna in the marketplace. We don't hear too much about Krishna in the social forums of life. But our attraction, even if we don't have the opportunity by convention, our attraction is strong because when we do have the option of determining how we conduct ourselves, we make that, at least in the beginning stage, regulative. We purposefully put hearing and chanting strongly in the discretionary parts of our day, so that even in the workplace, in the social, where there isn't abundant Krishna Katha, our attraction for that is there. So at intervals during the day, perhaps one can read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita or memorize, recite again a verse that we're memorizing, or think of something that we heard that morning or the previous day from the Srimad Bhagavatam discussion or Bhagavad Gita talk in Bhakti Riksha group, and how do I apply this in my life, and thinking in a regulative way so that, of course, gradually it becomes just a spontaneous part of one's life. The soul connecting with the Supreme while in all of these different Swadharma features of life. Very practical. And so Sutta Goswami is saying, what's the essence? It's pervasive. This is not a secular teaching. We do our devotional thing and then we do our worldly thing and we separate the two. That's not the message. The message is it's unified. It's holistic. It's our life is an expression of devotion to Krishna. And attraction for the message of Krishna is a measure of how successful we are in executing our Swadharmas. Whether it's children going to school, or housewives managing the home, or men in the office, or all of these other things that we do, the duties of life. Notpariyat yadi ratim shrama eva hi kevalam. Shrama means useless labor. Eva, certainly. Only. It's only useless labor. He means emphasis, like exclamation point. Certainly, only useless labor. And kevalam is another strong word. Absolutely. Entirely useless. Rubbish. If that one thing isn't achieved. So that's the standard. The gold standard. You measure everything against that. The attraction for the message of Krishna. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke an attraction for the message of the Personality of Godhead. When you read Prabhupada's purports, he composed these when he was in Vrindavan. And when I read these purports, I'm thinking, wow, these are so brilliant. Even the language is like reading poetry. It's really, really, really beautiful. And right to the point. And the condition that Prabhupada was writing, he hadn't even left Vrindavan yet, but he was meditating very deeply on the mission of going to the West and giving this message in language that people in the West would understand and get it, connect with the message of the essence of all of the Vedas. I mean, what a challenge. So it's like outpouring of his heart to wake up the conditioned souls that have completely forgotten their relationship with Krishna, so covered by absence of culture and absence of knowledge and deep in materialistic activities, to awaken their consciousness. It's very, very, very powerfully written. So, I'll read a little bit. Prabhupada is speaking about, he's going to speak about limited and extended selfishness. There's selfishness, and it's sometimes limited, sometimes extended, but it's all selfishness. Material activities are selfish. And the transcendental activities are Krishna-centered. It's Krishna's interest. And it's a difference between, it's a world of difference, a difference between the material and spiritual world. And the appeal is to come to the spiritual world, come to the spiritual position where Krishna is at the center. So, here's Prabhupada's language. There are different occupational activities in terms of a man's different conceptions of life. To the gross materialist, who cannot see anything beyond the gross material body, there is nothing beyond the senses, and therefore his occupational activities are limited to concentrated and extended selfishness. Concentrated selfishness centers around the personal body. This is generally seen amongst the lower animals. Extended selfishness is manifested in the human society and centers around the family, society, community, nation, and world with a view to gross bodily comfort. Like a lot of the causes of our modern times, that's the platform, the body. So then he's saying above the body, it's still selfishness, but it's on the mental plane. They're mental speculators who hover aloft in the mental spheres, and their occupational duties involve making poetry and philosophy or propagating some ism with the same aim of selfishness limited to the body and the mind. But above the body and mind is the dormant spirit soul, whose absence from the body makes the whole range of bodily and mental selfishness completely null and void. But the less intelligent people have no information of the needs of the spirit soul. Because foolish people have no information of the soul and how it is beyond the purview of the body and the mind, they are not satisfied in the performance of their occupational duties. The question of satisfaction of the self is raised herein. This series of verses was preceded by yenatma suprasidati. Atma suprasidati. The satisfaction of the self. So, that sounds like selfishness, but it's not. The selfishness that's being spoken of is this self-centered ism that has nothing to do with the self. Illusion. And real self-interest is Krishna-centered. What's Krishna's interest? That's my real interest. So one can't get to that until one comes to the platform of the soul and leaves behind the other isms, the mental isms, or the bodily stuff. Now, and when one comes to that transcendental platform, it does not mean that you don't care about other people, and you don't care about family, and you don't care about the world, and you don't care about anything. But rather, those things become spiritualized. They become connected to Krishna. We're not impersonalists, we're personalists. Everything has its relation to Krishna. So everything is important in relation to Krishna. Conversely, seen separately from Krishna, it has no real substance. Shrama eva hi kevalam. So the Bhagavatam's message is to spiritualize our entire life. But there's like one switch. You turn the one switch and it spiritualizes your whole life. And otherwise you're busy running around trying to spiritualize your life and it never finding it. Never reaching satisfaction. The center, the real center, not an imagined center, the real value of life needs to be connected with. And there's a science of how to connect with that. Prabhupada writes, the self is beyond the gross body and subtle mind. He is the potent active principle of the body and mind. Without knowing the needs of the dormant soul, one cannot be happy simply with emolument of the body and mind. The body and mind are but superfluous outer coverings of the soul. The spirit soul's needs must be fulfilled simply by cleansing the cage of the bird. One does not satisfy the bird. One must actually know the needs of the bird himself. Paragraph. The need of the spirit soul is... Here comes the poetry. One wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light in the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, personality and Godhead. There is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord, and any occupational activity which does not help one to achieve attachment for hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead is said herein to be simply a waste of time. Sounds like, for someone that's not a devotee, to hear this kind of language, they go, "Whoa, this is heavy. Why is Swamiji speaking like this? Why is the Bhagavatam?" But it's not compromising, because it's in the real interest of the soul. And an attempt at reaching for that wish of the soul to experience the Supreme, giving the platitudes of morality or ritual that doesn't specifically, because this is the dissatisfaction of Vyasa. He describes these things in the Vedas, but Narada is saying you have to describe the personality of Godhead vividly. Disclose him, reveal him, present him to the world. This Bhagavatam is such literature. The Srimad Bhagavatam can be read by anybody from any religious tradition and become attracted to the personality of Godhead. So it's not, Prabhupada, not all the time, but sometimes would speak about whether Christian, Hindu, Muslim. This is the essence of these teachings is to be a devotee of the Lord. That's what Vaishnavism is. So the particular ism is not what's the essence. The essence is this devotion to the personality of Godhead that's awakened by hearing about Him. His name, His qualities, His pastimes. And if there isn't name and qualities and pastimes, then it's a blur. And how do you love a blur? A notion that God exists. That's nice. And hearing about His particular features, so that awakens specific attraction of love. It awakens utpadayad. It awakens or produces rati. And the Bhagavatam is, we can say, rasika literature. Just by its nature that it's speaking about Krishna, it awakens love for Krishna. We may be way down in a dark place of consciousness, but hearing the message of the Bhagavatam directly glorifying. So here, the second chapter is laying down principles. And later on, these principles are expanded, further illuminated, but this chapter 2 is giving us foundational principles of how to evaluate our own application to life of spirituality, life in Krishna consciousness, how to understand the principles of any religious tradition, because it's not this ism, that ism, it's principles, essences. Because that was the question, what's the essence of all the whole Vedas? Pure devotional service, without motivation, without interruption. The measure of it is attraction for Vishvaksena Kata, Rati. Bhakti produces bhakti. When bhakti is properly, when devotional service is properly performed, attraction for Krishna awakens. And hearing about Krishna, describing Krishna, remembering Krishna awakens. The regulative practices that we're taking up, the same practices continue in a more advanced stage, and the more advanced stage is exhibited by spontaneous attraction. It's not that, in other words, it's not that we're doing something now and later we're going to do something different, better and more exquisite, more esoteric or something. The very same activity that we're doing now is the activity that the perfected soul is attracted to do. Shukadeva Goswami on the platform of topmost perfection, or our Goswamis of Vrindavan, their relish was the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's not, this is our regulative stage here leads to the spontaneous stage there. Rati. Rati is another word sometimes used interchangeably with bhava. the Bhava Bhakti platform is approached by the Sadhana Bhakti activities. It just, like a seed grows into a plant with flowers and fruits, it just happens as a progressive stage of development. Same for us. We don't need something else. But we do need to give very nice attention to these regulative practices. Okay, any discussion?
Trying to do the devotional service in the mode for connecting with the soul, like the addiction to the attachment to body and the mind is like sometimes so intense, like it is kind of bewildering while doing the devotional service, Maharaj. I'm worried, is there anything I can... I'm worried, what to do in those stages.
Okay, what to do in those stages when...
It was like...
We're trying to act from the soul, but we're very conditioned to the body-mind conception. The most powerful means of deliverance for the sage is the chanting of the holy name. So everything rests upon that, the qualitative way in which you chant the holy name. So when chanting, when it's chanting time, chant with the greatest of effort to hear the sound of Krishna's holy name. You're receiving and extending your consciousness to the holy name and receiving the holy name. Connect with the holy name. Be present with Krishna through the chanting process. And whatever mental struggles or other stuff is going on, keep going with faith that this will purify, and you'll experience the purification, and you'll experience how that spiritual potency carries into the other activities of life. And then hearing from the scriptures. Hearing from the scriptures is not something passive, it's something active, and one is to use one's intelligence, which means to consider from different angles of vision that message that you hear, and then apply. So a big part of going beyond the bodily and mental conceptions of life is how you apply application. Because to apply properly, you have to be present with the message. If one is hovering aloft on the mental plane, or if one is absorbed in the bodily conception, that pulls one away from applying the message. So you go to applying the message, which will automatically take care of going away. And, you know, although the tendency is pulling, go away. That's just conditioning. It's not who we really are. And one stays with effort, fixed in applying, and applying, and applying. So when you apply, your mind still, the attention is still going elsewhere, then it's no longer just your effort, it's with devotion, with dependence, you call upon Krishna. But that calling upon Krishna isn't going to happen without that prior effort, because, you know, we have this fruitive thing about us that says, I can do it. Except we can't. Without Krishna's mercy. So the more you sincerely apply the teachings, or strive to apply the teachings, the more you'll realize your dependent position. And therefore it invokes a sincere calling out for Krishna. When the sincere calling out for Krishna finally becomes manifest, Krishna's there. Krishna's right around the corner, just waiting for us to call. We're too busy to call, because we're just habituated to mental platform and bodily platform, hanging out. So Krishna doesn't interfere with our hanging out. He lets us hang out. Application. The fundamentals are proper chanting of the holy name, hearing the message of the scriptures with very serious contemplation. What's the message? How do I apply the message? How do I live this message? Sincerely, with feeling, calling out to Krishna to help. And when you see those habits of the mind to go to other stuff, you, as it's happening, you trash it. I'm not going to go there. Mind wants to go there. I'm not going to go there. I'm going to stay with Krishna. It's making it. I'm declaring war with Maya. I'm going to stay with Krishna. Anything?
Yeah, Maharaj. When children doesn't chant with the attention, or we have forced them sometimes. Suppose I heard that we shouldn't force, and if I don't force, they just neglecting slowly, and it's becoming then I worry, and next day I try to force. And then I'm not sure, and they forcefully chant, but they don't really chant properly, and their attention, and they get in the habits from the school, they are gaining so many new habits,
distractions.
And distractions. Should I force them, or? And they're only interested in, okay, come going to temple, coming to Bhakti Ruksha, and playing, and that's all.
They're children after all, huh? But, you know, attraction for Krishna is a natural condition, and it may take some time, but that natural attraction for Krishna can come out. And one of the things that perhaps you might want to consider is look inside yourself and see, am I doing because this is a behavior that I'm supposed to do, or is this because I actually want to be with Krishna? Look at acting from the heart. And that's that's very powerful. It's more powerful than regulative. It's more, or say, you know, do just because it's a duty. I'm doing these. You understand it? It's if you. The more you can be on the transcendental plane or plane of real devotion, real, you know, real feelings for Krishna, that's so attractive, so much more attractive than to help your, not only your own family but others. But you know, it starts with yourself. It's like supposing you have. You go to Bhakti Vriksha and there are some people who you really like. And so you emote to those people that you really like. You just strongly connect with those persons. There's other persons that you're polite with. Oh, how are you? How's it going? Nice to see you again. It's not, the connection isn't the same. So those persons that you have deep feeling for, the connection is stronger. Exchanges are deeper because it's from the heart. So, your own devotional practices, the more that they can become, you know, excited to be with Krishna, and you perform them in that consciousness, that example is very powerful. And the consciousness that one carries is very powerful. And that's, that can then, in the area of influence of your life, your family members and the social circle that you keep, it will amplify the impact that you know, purity is the force, is the short way of saying what I'm saying. Then you don't have the force, just purity is the force. So, continuing to encourage is the right way to go, but not force. Find something that the children like to do, devotional activity they like to do, encourage them in that way, or engage them in that way, but support them in that way. But look within yourself, how can my attraction for the holy name become stronger and stronger and stronger as the means of achieving purity, and purity is having faith in that principle. Purity is the force. And just stepping back from, you know, the immediate dynamic that you described, when the community of children amongst themselves also starts to grow and grow and grow, that Sangha will help, the community develop will help your family development because of good association. And the good association is so much more attractive than the other association at school. And then, so then how the children can make the right decisions or not feeling, I'm living in two different worlds. I've heard children described like this. When with at the temple or with the devotees, I'm a devotee. And when I'm in school, I'm not a devotee. Because that's not cool. People can't understand or can't relate to it, so, you know, I have another hat, another external presence, because I want to be accepted by the kids at school. So the stronger the identification, internal, not just external, but internal identification with a life of devotion to Krishna, and it's cool. You know, the association of devotees, my devotee friends, that's my real life. Some identity has to grow like that. So as the community grows, your own children can grow. when they can have that association of others who are like that, like, you know, like they are, then it's okay to be who I am. You know, right in the school situation. As adult, you have to learn how to do that too. And it's, you know, it's a little delicate sometimes. How do you, your eating habits and your speaking habits and your dress habits and your what you talk about habits. And these other people are talking about this, all this other gobbledygook. But, you know, so in the workplace or the social circumstance, you have to have a clear sense of who I am. It's okay to be who I am. And I'm not condemning those wicked people that talk about all these other things and do and eat and drink all these other things and smoke these other things and So you know, as an adult, you have the same challenge. But you have more tools, more sophistication, and to move, you know, dexterously and gracefully between your own personal life and what other people are doing around you. So it will help the children a lot if they have nice devotee friends. And when they get together, it's not just play, it's devotional activity. And so that has to be nurtured, how to do devotional activity when you're together with your devotee friends. That takes time. A tree doesn't grow from a seed to a flower-bearing fruit tree in 6 months or a year. It doesn't happen that way. I mentioned at this other program that if it's nice to have role models. So do you have a copy of this Soul Connection DVD? Do you have a copy here? You don't. Do you have a DVD copier here?
Yes.
Okay. Before we go, you make a copy. Yes. And you can distribute it. And then, you know, some fusion between the kids here and the kids that I have already been at this for 10 years. They have, you know, they get it. And they're having a grand time. I mean, they have their challenges. Sometimes one of them gets a little weak. And the others help bring them. And they're learning that social skill. I mean, they share this with me. So-and-so is, you know, getting some bad association. And they talk in that language. They understand what's going on. You know, what can we, I don't like that bad behavior and that bad language. What do we do? Because my thing is, I just want to like hit the eject button. I don't want anything to do with that person. But I know that's not right. That's just like protecting myself. I really should extend myself to that person and help them. They're learning the social skills of helping one another stay in devotional association, in a devotional mood. It's really far out. Because devotee kids have a great advantage. They're really sensitized to things that non-devotee kids aren't sensitized to, like subtle things. And social responsibility and caring, genuinely caring. It's really far out to watch it. And then, you know, some other structure from the adults that can just be supportive. And helping the kids learn the social skills and make the right choices. And so I'm a believer in the principle that it takes, Bhakti Tirtha Swami would say this regularly, but it there's this saying that it takes a whole village to raise a child. Meaning there's so many different relationships and so many different people that can all help in making a success story. And when you find a success story, it's generally not just one person. It's a collective series of set of circumstances and personalities and relationships that help. Quite likely very prominent one or a few, but it's collective. So anyway, I think role models help. And if some your children and other children can mix with these other kids that are we had some discussion in the car ride on the way back about that, so you can hear some more details. Something that I'm learning about the psychology is age differences can mean a lot to the kids. Like, you know, is so-and-so your same age? No, I'm 1 year older. So, like with the men and kids, with those three, the three girls, the men and family, they have... Each of the girls has their own circle of, you know, they read together with kids their own age, with kids their own age, with kids their own age. You know, somebody wants to connect, they want to connect with the kids their own age. I'm learning about social dynamics of children through this experience. And then some don't mind. You know, they can mix different ages, it's fine. But, you know, having some ability to relate. So, where do you find? Where do you find that? It's, you know, it's, so, your immediate association is right here, you know, your Bhakti Riksha group. But then, there's other support association facilities that you have. And so, it seems to me kids need that too. At least, you know, start developing further. And then further. At least, you know, when the maturity level permits, at least they have others that are friends. Because growing up in this world, having friends is real important. And for children, it's especially important. And having nice devotee friends, that helps bring the attraction out. It's 5:07. Shiva Prabhupada, can you hear that?